Welcome, friends.
Hi.
Hello.
Etc.
Y'all are listening to
How Do You Do?
The show where we
interview our friends
about their jobs.
You got it.
It's time to learn, y'all.
Zoom, 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 zoom. Hi, and welcome to How Do You Do? Is that good enough?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, this is How Do You Do. This is our show that we do. Well, it used to be weekly, and now it's monthly. And then recently it was a little more. We took a break.
We did have a break. I think we did have one in December.
We did, but we took a little longer than a month. So to our listeners, I honestly am not sorry. You should take breaks.
Yeah.
This is busy. This is a show where we ask people questions about their jobs, and the most important thing about having a job is taking breaks. Our guest, my name is Brad Breakfast, you're Hannah Backwards. Our guest is Evan Hughes, the king of Tulsa. You're the king?
I think Sylvester Stallone is, but I'm here right now, so.
That's what the show claims.
Yeah, he didn't like Tulsa. He said it was too hot.
Really?
Yeah. No, he said he probably won't be back.
Wow. So there's no season two.
I don't know. The show wasn't, I mean, it was okay.
Maybe not in the summer. A winter version of Tulsa King.
One of my friends got to be on an episode, so I at least want to watch his episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it CR or?
It was Josh Fadum.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And he sometimes co-hosts with me on various, you know, shows and does guest spots on shows. And
yeah, he was supposed to be on a show that I was on, and then he had to drop or something. I didn't get to meet him. I was kind of bummed about that.
I remember that. That specifically was, an audition.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty good role, and they were worried, and he was worried about possibly catching COVID in this like short period where it was like, if you get it right now, you're going to lose all this money because we're not going to take you.
Yeah.
So he just didn't do anything for that period.
Yeah, he's...
That's understandable. I mean...
He's one of my favorite characters on 30 Rock.
Yeah. 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 He's been on Better Call Saul, and he wrote for Eric Andre's show, and he was on a bunch of Twin Peaks. And just a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Super talented guy right here from Tulsa. Just like all of us.
Yeah.
We're exactly like him.
Same.
So, Evan, you are a comedy booker, promoter, but also just general personality around town. I mean, everybody knows you. I've met people through you, more people than I can count. And you mostly deal with comedy, right? Are you still in music promotion and that kind of stuff?
Well, it's funny. I originally got known for comedy, and that was all I was known for. But then, you know, the other things like liking stuff on social media and being in music videos. And then, you know, now it depends on what sector of Tulsa you're in, how they know me. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, my comedy friends and people that have seen me do stand-up or people that have known me a long time, they're like, yeah, Evan, comedy. But there's other people that have never been to a show, and that's not the first thing they think of when they think of me. They've seen me in a video somewhere, and then I'm the guy that was in that video that they saw.
I know for a period of time, you were just like a guy that I saw when I went to the bar. And just like everybody knows him, everybody's hugging him. He's a super nice guy. And that's still true. I do see you when we go out a lot.
Well, yeah, I think that happened because of comedy.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I first, I did my first stand-up set March of 2015. And I started going to the Yeti pretty heavily a little bit later in that year. But when I was down there, I'd be like, yeah, I do stand-up, and I was the only person saying it. And now I can't really ever claim that. Like, they always know more people than just me.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was so unique and weird that it really was helpful to just like, oh, you're the comedy guy, and there wasn't a whole lot of that happening downtown. A lot of our shows were primarily back then not downtown.
Yeah. I mean, they were still at Ben. at Looney Bin.
Yeah, Looney Bin was everybody's dream.
Yeah.
You know, Looney Bin was the goal.
That was the place where comics hung out. They had an open mic, the only open mic, comedy open mic.
And it was big. Yeah, I mean, it was a big deal. And a lot of the comics that start out today, their goal is obviously not, their goal isn't to do the Looney Bin,
yeah.
You know, and that's not, you know, I'm not even dogging on the Bin. I like the Bin. They put me up on a weekend just like a month ago. And they would be willing to work with these new comics. I think there's just a separation where like the new comics aren't as aware of it and they're not aware of the new comics. That kind of,
right.
That pipeline mm-hmm. isn't what it used to be, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I've never gotten a direct offer to do it, which is fine because I've also never like sought out to do, I mean, I've never done their open mic. I just don't know. I can't do a clean set, and I know their rules aren't as tight there, but I think that's a big part of the separation is that we're doing, they used to call it alternative comedy.
Yes.
And that's, what we do is that. We aren't doing the road comic stuff, you know, the stuff that we grew up watching. We're doing the stuff that came on later at night, you know, the Brian Posehn and Eugene Merman kind of stuff. That's who we all liked. So I don't know. I don't know if that has a space in comedy. I mean, I guess it does have a space in comedy clubs, but in that specific one, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I do. Thinking back to my sets there this last time, like I'm pretty alt, not too alt for them, but I'm sure they think of me that way. The audience thinks of me that way. The touring comics are thinking of me that way.
Right.
Because, I mean, I have some material that's definitely club material, but I have a lot of stuff. I mean, I have that, you may have heard me do that orange juice joke where I just get up on the mic and I'm like making sounds where I'm like, you know, yeah. It's like, they're like, this is a weird joke and this is not a typical club joke.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I'm doing that there, but with the confidence of like, hey, I've been here for 8 years. I got my start at this club.
Yeah.
I belong here as much as you guys mm-hmm. belong here. And this is what we're doing.
Here's my you best know. Joke.
Yeah, this is, yeah, you just got it. You know, I don't know. I think the alt stuff won't really get you in trouble there. But I think like a heavy amount of cursing could get you in trouble there. Like if you say the word motherfucker like 15 times in your set. And I'm not saying that I'm not saying that throwing any shade, like you shouldn't be saying,
yeah.
I'm like, there's a place, there's comedy that's funny that says motherfucker 15 times.
Absolutely.
Looney Bin just, and it's not even so much, I don't think that Looney Bin doesn't like it. Some of the road comics that they're working with don't want that to be their opener. And Looney Bin is just trying to kind of keep everybody happy. They want the comics to be happy that are coming in. They want the audience to be happy. You know,
it's where they want people to like go on a date. You know, they want kind of vanilla things.
Well, that's how it was explained to me when I first started comedy. People said this is where your parents go on a date when they want to see comedy, and if that's what you want to do, go for it. But that's not what we were doing when I started at Fur Shop. You know, it was completely different.
You know what's so funny about the Bin too was like there was legitimately a thing when I started where like. You know, everybody's goal was the Looney Bin. And once you got selected to be an MC, all of the locals came to one of your shows. I think it was like even the first show, it was like everybody got together to come support you to see you like have your baptism or whatever. I hate to use like a religious term, but you know, whatever. I'm not religious. This is not a religious podcast.
It is not.
Not at all. If you saw where we are right now. but yeah, I mean, that kind of thing is not existing anymore. And I'm not blaming it anyway. It's not the comics. It's not the Looney Bin. It's just there's sometimes like a cultural shift or a shift in the scene and things just change. You can't keep things the same forever. You know, I don't even think the Comedy Store probably isn't the same now as it was, you know, 5 years ago, you know, or any place. Like things just kind of, you know, move along.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, things just evolve.
yeah and we're gonna talk about that a lot on this episode. I think we should go ahead and get into it. I do have a shout out this week, and do you remember why?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, I'm gonna set the scene. It's 2022. my credit card got stolen. And I called the bank and canceled the charge. It was for $12. And it was for something called like mywritingtutor.com. Then I got an email from a very angry man named Vivon Bala. And he was mad that I canceled what he said was a legitimate charge. I've done a shout out to this guy on this show.
Yeah, around when it happened.
Yeah. So it was for some stupid fidget thing. I didn't order it. It was how they tested my credit card. They put in the billing address, and so that's what he had, and that's why he decided it was real. And I found that same fidget thing in a bin store last weekend. I bought it for $3, and then I sent him an email just checking on him. I just wanted to know. He was so angry, and he called me a Karen.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I had the audacity to say, no, sir, that's my $12. And he, I think he's probably doing well, but he was just as angry when I talked to him on email. And he has now decided that I have no friends, and my partner, Hannah, here, is a figment of my imagination.
Yeah.
And he told me he had been passing the phone around with his friends, and there were five of them having drinks. Here's the fun part. He lives in Los Angeles, and that conversation happened at 11 a.m. my time, which is 9 a.m. L.A. time. Mm. So he claimed to be drinking with five friends at 9 a.m., while yeah. they emailed somebody about a customer service issue. And so this shout out is to Vivon, who's drinking at 9 a.m. and crazy as a loon. And I hope he's listening to this. I did send him a link. And Vivon, I hope all is well. But like, I hope you got that $12 somewhere else. I do have a rant this week.
Yeah.
I do. It's about gatekeeping. Evan, this is where you come in.
Speaking of gatekeeping, that was an interesting segue there.
Are we gatekeepers, Evan?
I don't think I am. I don't think you are.
Have you been called a gatekeeper?
I think... That's so funny you say that. I think people have brought that word up around me, but just kind of more of a like... Not even that it's a bad thing, but just kind of wondering what my reaction would be, or like, is this how you're seen, or is this what you're doing? You know, but not like, I've never been called that in an accusing way by someone like, you were gatekeeping me out of this thing. You know, it's like, I don't think, I've never heard that before. So, you know, it's like a, you know.
Yeah.
Have you?
I have.
Oh, wow.
I was recently called a gatekeeper.
Well, by who? Are we allowed to do names on
yeah,
the podcast?
Yeah, I'll do it. Preston Sly called me a gatekeeper because... And he has never been to one of my mics. I've never said he was not allowed. I've never said anyone was not allowed to come to one of my mics. Well, save one person. It was before I started hosting at Starlight. I got angry because a guy did a racist rape joke on stage at Starlight.
Damn.
And walked the entire room.
Yeah.
The entire, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they were pissed. And I messaged people and I was like, so I was there. This was the bit. And people were like, holy shit, that guy's not allowed to come to our mics anymore. That is the only time it's ever happened. But people have, I guess, come to Starlight or other mics and either not done well or like I didn't like their bit, which I don't have to like every single bit. But decided that because they didn't get our immediate approval, that they were canceled.
Yeah.
So I've been accused of, I've never canceled a person because I don't know anybody famous.
Yeah. But booking is so, I've said all this privately, but I've never made like a big public statement about booking or anything, you know.
Yeah.
But like when I first ever started booking, I really didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Sure.
You know, all you can really do is kind of see, you know, you kind of use your intuition or whatever, and you kind of do what's been done before. But I pretty much just would put anybody on, and I didn't really think too much about how the lineups would work together, or even like the order. It was sort of just like there was no science behind it for me. Not that there even really is now. I mean, it's always, you know, debatable. Like you could have what you think is the perfect order, and someone in the room is like, oh no, it's completely backwards. So it's all subjective. Whatever they say about your show is, you know, their opinion, and we're all doing our best. I mean, no one's trying to do an order or a lineup that sucks or is wrong. You know, I mean, why would you do that? It's your show. Whatever product you're putting out is the best that you thought it could be, and that should be apparent to everybody. It's like, this is what he thought was good, even if you think it sucks. Like, he's trying. Yeah. I'm not trying to lose the venue. You know, I'm not trying to lose anything. You know, I don't. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, you know, we're like I'm saying, we're doing the best we can. But over the years that I've been doing it, I've tried to kind of curate it more to what I think is going to work.
Sure.
In the room, and so certain comics do better on my show. Certain comics don't, you know, always fit my lineups for what I'm doing for whatever the show is in that venue. And it's there's very few people, if any, I can think of right now that I would like never use, you know, or that don't like have a place at all. But I, you know, some comics are just, it's not even that we're buddies. It's just like their shit goes over really well and they're really funny. And it's not like, I don't book like best friend shows.
Yeah.
You know, I think when I started and I was worse at this, I was closer to doing that when I first started than I am now. But even then it was just like, I'll admit now that booking was just like trial and error. It's like, you're just starting. You don't know really what the fuck you're doing at first.
Yeah.
You know, so you got, just like anything else, you get better. And now I'm like over four years in, I think, minus the pandemic time, which you can't really count that, but
yeah, nobody
I'm
does.
At least 3 years into it, and I know I've gotten better at it.
Well, and that's how you learn, is you just experience those things, and you're like, well, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, with the mic, I've got rules I've got to follow, and I have to hold people to those rules, even if we don't necessarily go over every single one. There's certain shit that room's not going to like. If the bar owner doesn't have to come to me and say, hey, I don't want to hear any slurs on that stage, but I can know that the space I'm in, if a slur is said on stage in a hateful way, it's going to piss off the entire room.
Yeah.
Or it's going to make people uncomfortable or whatever, which is not what I want at an open mic. But that's why we had a very simple rule, which was don't punch down. Like, if you can avoid it, just avoid it. If you don't have enough material to tailor it to every single room, then you're not doing comedy correctly. You have to be able to read the room. You have to be able to leave certain bits out if you know they're not going to work.
And I'll do a shout out to somebody. Jaden Puckett is someone that's been doing comedy in Tulsa a long time. And there was a long time where I really wasn't putting him on my shows. It was nothing personal. I just wasn't booking Jaden for a while. Like, he just wasn't really in my lineups. I was just using other people. And then I threw him on one show, and he fucking killed, and it was great. And now it's like every time I'm doing a show, I'm kind of thinking about, you know, I throw Jaden on this one or just on the next one. And that can happen. So there can be people that I haven't been, just because I haven't used you in a year or 6 months or however long it's been, it doesn't mean I don't like you or I'm never going to use you. You might not be on my radar currently, but you can still message me and be like, hey, do you have anything for me? Cause sometimes when I book too, I love that we're talking about this, cause it's also booking is so human, you know, and there's always error. And like, I'll sometimes like, I'm like, oh my God, I got to get this show ready for Sound Pony. And I'm like, holy shit, who should I use? And I'll literally go look at flyers that I've had. And I'm like, I cycle people back in that I just had a few months ago. And it's just that they're fresh on my flyers. Or I'll go look at my messages and I'll scroll for a bit. And I'll be like, oh yeah, this person, I like just talked to them 2 weeks ago. Boom, they're on the show. And it's like, I'll book it within an hour. And it's like, maybe that's not the most fair to how hard everyone is working at a mic or whatever. But it's just like, that's me sometimes,
yeah,
you know. And I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to not have a good show, and those shows are good too, But if I'm missing you, you know, hit me up. Even if you're listening to this right now and you're like, oh, I haven't been on Evan's show in a while, you can message me.
Sure.
You know, hit me up.
I message you all the time. Yeah. I talk to you.
The people that hit me up and are like, hey, I could use your show. I could use your show. That shows, you know, incentive and hunger to do comedy and a want to do comedy. There's people that I've hit up where, you know, I'm asking them to be on a show, but I'm not scouring everyone's social media, but there's people that are like not even posting the flyer. And I'm like, do you even really care to be doing, like, how into comedy are you?
Yeah.
Do you care about this at all?
Yeah.
And there's people that I know do care and I might be missing them and I don't want to miss those people. We're just doing the best we can.
You can't go to every open mic.
I can't because I'm already going to all my shows and I don't want to be tired of it. Like, I don't want to be tired of, I don't want to be burned out. So it's like sometimes I can only go to, you know, 12 shows a month. And I did 12 shows that month. And those were the 12. But a lot of times, I mean, Hilton will tell you that I've popped up at Starlight. Hunt Club will tell you they've seen me at Hunt Club. Starlight, Open Mic will say they've seen me there. Not every week, but you've seen me there before. There's people you've never seen. You've seen me. maybe only 5 times, but you've seen me.
You've shown up. I've asked you to come out, and you made a special trip just to come see our mic. But you gave me a show, and that nobody else has given me a show like that. But you gave me. You were like, this space needs a show on this date. That's what you should do, and it was successful. And we've been doing it since then. We've been doing it every month and pack the house every single time we do it. And it's amazing.
Yeah, and Heirloom loves you guys. Yeah. You know, it's been perfect. And I'm down to do that. It's just, I think the fact that you wanted it and had initiative and things like that, it's like there's comics that are excelling big time and they just want it really bad. Like they're writing all the time. They're going to everything. They're hitting up bookers. And not everybody wants it that bad. And all of this, I'm not condemning anyone because I've done it wrong too. It's like, I've been lazy. I've not advocated for myself. I've not worked as hard as I could have at times. And that's just human. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a great conversation with a comic today. He's not even from Tulsa. And we were both talking about the same things where he was sort of like, you know, talking about, I think he was saying that he moved. And when he moved, all his jokes became new again. So he's like, well, I didn't write for a while because when I moved to the new city, all of my old shit was fresh again and they were all liking it. So it kind of held me back in a way because it just enabled me to just hold on to my same set.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, that didn't exactly happen to me. But writing is one of the hardest things for almost any comic, no matter what level of the game you are. Sure. It's like writing is fucking hard.
And it's time consuming. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, if I'm already doing, you know, it's about to be 2 open mics, 2 shows that I'm hosting, and then a part of, you know, 5 other shows, and then working 50 to 60 hours a week on top of that, when do I write? When do I sleep, for that matter? And that's all stuff we're going to get into. Do you have a fact for us, Hannah?
Oh, yeah. The first recorded fart was the first recorded joke was about farting.
Do you have the joke?
I do. So, said this ancient Sumerian engraving, something which has never occurred since time immemorial, a young woman did not fart in her husband's lap.
Ooh. That's a spicy joke.
Yeah.
It's not a bad joke. I mean, it's kind of simple. It's not a premise punchline. It's just a funny statement.
Funny quip.
But let's ask Evan some questions. You want to start?
Yeah.
Go for it.
All right, Evan, we do ask everybody who comes on the show this question. What are your pronouns?
He, him.
Okay.
And you're a booker, promoter. I mean, how do you describe your job?
Man, it's funny because I never wanted that title. So even though I'm doing it, it's almost sort of like, you took a job that you didn't want and they're like, all right, you're the fry cook. And you're like, all right, I'm going to be the fry cook, but I'm not going to say that. You know, it's like, I'm not going to tell people I'm a fry cook. So it's like, when I saw the amount of work and stress that it put the bookers under when I first started, and I was like, dude, I don't want to do your job. I don't want to take your job. I don't want to have to do this because I see how hard it is. I had a couple people always like, dude, you got to do this. Like, you know too many people. Like, if you did it, it would bring people out, and it would be helpful for the comics. Like, you could do – it was basically like you could change so many lives speech, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you could do a lot of good, and you're not right now. No, I'm not trying to guilt trip you. I mean, he was cool about it. But, I mean, it was really hitting home, and, you know, we saw each other all the time, you know, and that message was said to me a lot. And when Yeti closed, we lost, you know, being able to do the open mic there on Tuesday, the writer's night that Damian Shade hosted. We lost being able to do weekend shows. They had outside shows. They had inside the smoking room shows. They had shows in the lobby. There was a lot of comedy that happened there at different times on different days. And we lost all of that. And I had this vision and feeling that I was like, dude, if stages just start to, like, you know, one goes away here, another goes away 6 months from now, and stuff starts going away, and I'm not part of a solution here, I'm not actively trying to, like, build up, and stuff is going away and it's crumbling or taking stuff from us, it's like I can't sit around and just be like, oh man, we lost this, we lost that. It's like I have to get active to do shit, you know, to combat it. It's like, okay, you took that one, let me start two over here, and then we're up. You know, and so that was really when I did it. And Heirloom became a brewery in 2018, I believe. I'm 99% sure that's right. And that was the year the Yeti went away. And Jessica Herman was telling me she wanted to have a comedy night. You know, they were trying to get the place popping. She's like, I'm manager of this place, but it's brand new. It's in Kendall Whittier. There wasn't even as much stuff out there at the time that opened. And people didn't know what it was. And she needed to get people in there. And I was like, well, why don't you have, you know, I was like, this person could run your show or whatever. And she was just like, she just looked at me. She's like, well, I'd really like you to do it. And it was just, it was like the perfect storm of just in that moment of all things where I was just like, I'll do it. You know, and I was just like, kind of like, oh, fuck, you know, and I didn't know how it was going to go. I didn't know if I was going to like it. And I don't remember what the first show was, but it was probably just a pretty safe, like, couple of my friends on the show, but not thinking about, like, you know, who's gonna bring me people, like, how is this comic gonna do on a show following this comic or whatever, you know. So it was just probably a very, like, not as much thought as I would put into that show now show. But we've never looked back. We've always had a great relationship with Heirloom, as you do too. Heirloom is such a cool place. They deserve a huge shout out on the show.
We love just, them.
And I think if Heirloom hadn't gone so well, I might not have started that next show. You know, Heirloom was like, oh, yeah, dude, I could do this. This is like a thing. Like, you just make a flyer, tell people to come, make sure a sound system, like, introduce people. You know, it's a banger, you know.
That's wonderful. So is that what made you start doing the comedy booking officially? Was that, like, Heirloom success?
It was Heirloom, yeah, and just encouragement from people and there being a need for it, and, like, the threat of, like, what could happen to the scene if venues just start disappearing, which they do. You know, if we're not starting new shows, like, what's the scene going to look like? You know, we're only going to have two rooms, and it's happened in other cities. I mean, I can't really give you, like, an exact – well, I mean, I actually probably could say one or two. But, that's what happens. I mean, if venues go away and comics slowly start to quit and we're not encouraging new people to start comedy and encouraging new rooms to, like, start a show, it's like that's when our scene is growing, or we don't have to worry about – let's say I just recently kind of lost a venue, maybe. I don't want to say it like I lost it, but it's not really happening for right now. Due to just something out of my control. I had nothing to do with my show. But, you know, that could just kind of happen and people could quit. You know, some people could quit or move, and it's like the scene is taking a hit, and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
Well, so this brings us to a question that I've heard people ask about you, and they've definitely asked me directly, but, and you don't have to answer if it's uncomfortable. What does this kind of work pay?
I mean, it truly just depends on the deal that you work out with the venue. I mean, yeah, it's all in what you negotiate. I mean, I have different deals with almost every venue.
Yeah.
But it's certainly not the kind of thing where it's like you're going to get rich from it. I mean, in this market, I mean, if you had a fucking show every night, I mean, sure. But I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, I think comedy in general, unless you're, you know, hitting Comedy Central, even doing a late night show isn't guaranteed like big money. You know, it's like comedy is it's really difficult to make it about the money.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't sell it to people like that. Like, I'm not like, hey, get into this, but it will change your life. You know, if you're thinking about getting into comedy, don't do it for the money, but just from the amount of fun you'll have, the amount of friends you'll have, or that you'll make, or the amount of connections. I mean, it's so easy to meet people as a comic. It makes you approachable in a way. And some people, like, you might not even like that. Like, you might, yeah. There's a lot of comics where they're like, do not approach me after the show. And I totally understand that. But for people that want to be approached, you can be approachable, because people will come up and be like, hey, good set. And you never know if that's going to be someone that ends up being a good friend. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I've met so many people just from walking off stage. And I think appearing like someone that would be okay with being approached.
Yeah.
And I am.
Yes.
You know, but without comedy, like, imagine how would I be approached? Like, if I was just in Yokozuna eating dinner and I'm not a comedian, why the fuck would you come up to me?
Right.
You know, but if you did see me on a show, you might come up to me, because you're kind of becoming a public figure, even on a small level, obviously. But I mean, in a small town, you kind of stick out too.
Well, and it feels like you're putting yourself out there because you're getting on stage. So if you've already made that leap, you're not going to mind somebody coming up after you and talking to you about it.
Yeah. And I've gotten so used to, like, people will tell me too. It's like, people can literally grab me and I won't instantly turn around. Like, I'm usually just like, people will put their hands behind me, like hug me from behind. And I'm like, it can be one of a million people, but it's probably okay.
Yeah.
I'm probably not about to get choked unconscious. Yeah. Anywhere I am in Tulsa.
This feels safe.
You feel safe, you know? And it's like, half the time I do, I turn around and it's like, oh, it's someone I know, you know? But people feel comfortable with me that I'm just kind of a, like, you know, a mascot, where it's like, yeah, he's like the kind of mascot you can pull his tail, you know? Like, when you go to Chuck E. Cheese, it's like, yeah, I'm here eating a pizza and I'm going to fuck with this rat, yeah, you know?
That's why I went.
Yeah.
I mean, you are one of the nicest people in this fucking scene. Yeah, no,
like, legitimately. So what's the best and worst part of doing this?
I think the best part is kind of everything I've stated that's good, but it's kind of it goes back to a conversation I had earlier with that other comic from the story about them moving. But we were talking about how a lot of comics, when they get into it, you know, it's like you're dreaming of being on, you know, SNL, or being, you know, viewed or seen by millions of people. But then it's like you realize that it's like, man, I made 30 people's night better tonight. You know, yeah. Like, I gave all these people a show to come to, and everybody had a good time. It's like, I honestly, and I don't try to, I can't keep track of the amount of people that somehow know each other or became friends through my events in some way.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like even other comics becoming friends with each other because I kept booking them on the same show, and then they're interacting on social media and it's like they have a whole other friendship now. And it's like, I'm not solely taking credit for that, but it's like we're all contributing to a positive community space, you know, where things can happen within your space. And that was something I thought about with the Yeti a lot too, with like the owners of it, the fact that they opened that bar, so many good, you know, bad, you know, obviously people got in, met people they didn't want to meet there, but there's a lot of people that met their, you know, future spouse there, or their future best friend, or just found a friend group, went there not knowing anyone, and because of the existence of the space, ended up with a group of friends. Mm-hmm. You know? And so I think that should be one of my goals. You know, and it's funny talking about all the stuff, because I could talk about it forever, because there's so many good things that it's like the list would be endless. Like, all the good things that are happening from it directly and indirectly. And the bad list is so small. Like, honestly, we all focus so much on the bad and, like, the little drama or whatever because we're, you know. But it's so few and far between compared to the positives. I really think it is.
I agree.
You know, the bad is small. It's like, has someone that otherwise would have liked me become a little bit frustrated with me because I run shows that they're not on? Yes, it's impossible to keep everyone happy. You can't worry about that. But the amount of people that are happy far outweighs that. And I think ultimately the negatives are so minor, and it's just life stuff. It's just the same thing as, like, if we worked at the same job and I had a promotion that you didn't get, like, maybe that would make you feel some kind of way about me, or it would be kind of, I would annoy you in some way, but it's like, I can't help all that. I can't control all that. I can't manage everyone's feelings and emotions. And luckily I've gotten better at not being worried about it. I mean, I think if you start into this, you go down this path, you're going to have that in the beginning, at least, where you start to worry about, oh, fuck, I'm not keeping everyone happy. But at some point you're going to have to let that go, because it's just going to get in the way, you know, or it's going to discourage you and make you want to quit. And yeah, you don't want that.
You can't. I mean, people are going to find a reason to be mad at you if that's what they set out to do. I mean, like you said, I've made more friends doing this than anything else. And I love the people I consider friends, you know, from this community. But there are always the assholes who wanted to have a bad day. They looked for a reason to be angry, and they found it in, like, they didn't book me because I'm too edgy for them. Like, at that point, you just go, you came up with your own reason, and that's fine.
Well, and look at Heirloom, too. It's like having a show there supports a local business. It brings people in. It helps even with just, like, the awareness of the space, which we've talked about before, but it's like, that's a benefit too, where it's like, even if, let's say, 40 people come, but 900 people saw the flyer and saw the name of your business and they know you exist, or they see the address, or I've seen it in real time where, like, when I first started a show, you know, I could use Heirloom as an example, but there's so many other examples, but, like, I'd be like, oh, I had the show there, and everyone's like, where's that, or what's that? Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years later, no one says that anymore. And I'm dealing with that right now with Thelma's Peach, which is a new show I started.
Yeah.
And Thelma's Peach, I'm getting a lot of, like, oh, what's that? Where is that? And I guarantee you, give me time, that will go away. Mm. No one will ask me what it is anymore.
Yeah.
Because just they will see it and hear about it. They might not even go, but they know what it is. And that's valuable to the business. And that's something that you're doing within the community to connect people and support local businesses. I mean, if we're not going to do that, you know, then it's just Tulsa could just be Chick-fil-A and Target. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Or these places end up closing. It's places like, you know, I saw the other day that I think it was local, right? The Brothers Hooligan was closing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were posting about it. And it's like, you know, that sucks. I mean, I didn't eat there very often, but, like, you know, I don't know what happened or what the story is, but, like, that will happen to any place that we're not actively supporting or pushing or doing events there. And it's funny how much we've talked about Heirloom, but, like, I'm about to do a spelling bee up there.
Yeah.
Legit.
Yeah.
And that I've never been involved in one of those in the last 8 years. It wasn't my idea, but I agreed to, like, come on and be a part of it and be a judge. And I think it's a great thing, and other places might pick it up and be like, hey, we should do one over at, you know, American Solera or Dead Armadillo or whatever, you know, all these different cabin boys. And maybe it'll be maybe not as successful as Trivia Night, but maybe it'll be like something. And all these places need a Trivia Night. They need a karaoke. They need a comedy night. And all of this stuff keeps your business alive. Like, the places that have all of those different things going on are rarely the ones closing. Like, if you have active community nights where you're bringing people in, like, when was the last time you heard about those places closing?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. And Heirloom does have the best pizza in town behind it. Dante's
Wood Fire
fucking slaps.
Oh my god. Best pizza I've ever had, dude. And I'm not, yep. No cap.
The you last know, the one best. I had was incredible, and I hope they have it every time, to What's be
the,
honest.
What was the one you had?
The Yoker. It was my
dude,
signature.
I had the Yoker last time.
Was amazing.
I'm just telling you. So, Remember I couldn't do that riff show?
Yeah.
So I showed up before your show, had my Yoker. I kept hoping. I knew I had to drive with Lauren to Joplin, but I stayed there as long as I absolutely could, even being a few minutes later than when I told Lauren I would be at her house to go there. And I was sitting up at Heirloom to see if any of the comics would pull up eating my Yoker. And I ended up not seeing anyone, but I was there until like the last minute.
It was phenomenal.
So fucking good.
Oh my God.
People don't even know, dude.
Eat there. Yeah. Support Heirloom. Support Dante.
Please.
It's crazy. It's
good.
Just that we're involved in a place that has like the secret best pizza in Tulsa.
Yes, yeah.
Like we're involved with that business.
It's a tiny truck behind the brewery.
Yes.
And it's amazing.
And we want them to be around. And to do that, you need to support them.
And Bo was instrumental in Lone Wolf in the early days. Yeah. And Bo's not a big braggy person and stuff like that. But he was there on the truck before it had the brick and mortar. He's got a Lone Wolf tattoo. And he's the guy, you know? I mean, he's done it before, you know? Like, he knows food.
Yes, he does.
You know, he knows it. He's good.
All right, Evan. So here's the tricky question. We ask this on every episode. Do you have any rivals?
I really don't think I do. I'm serious. I really don't look at it like I think, honestly, everybody that's doing what I do, I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, seriously, like if I thought of them as rivals, when you were like, oh, I, you know, would like to start a show, I would have been like, nah.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'd be actively blocking people or like doing something. I mean, seriously, I mean, the people that have reached out to me to like get help contacting venues, I've helped all of them.
You got me that meeting with Ruby Red.
Yeah.
We're about to start that open mic and that other riff show. It's going to be, I mean, that's not something a rival would do.
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, it's just the relationships that I have with the venues and the comics and what I've been doing, I'm not insecure about it. It's like I've known the guy at Vanguard for before I did comedy. And we're doing that show together no matter what's happening, you know, and I feel safe with that. Same thing with Sound Pony. It's like I've been going to Sound Pony forever and I'm not worried about the show going away. I'm going to be doing my thing. I'm in my lane, you know, other people are in their lane. There's plenty of room. And I often think of it as like, think of the music scene. The music scene has, look at Mercury Lounge, Colony, any of these places. They have a different musician going up every night. It's not like there's only one musician that goes up at Mercury and he owns right. Mercury Lounge and that's his venue. Yeah. And if any other musician tries to get on a different night, you know, he needs to fuck off because he's stepping on someone's toes. It's like, no, it's like the reason why the music scene is bigger than us. And frankly, I mean, music is bigger than comedy everywhere. As big as comedy even is in LA, there's a bigger music scene in LA. It's like music is just bigger. It's bigger with everyone because it's just more people do it. It's bigger, whatever. But more people are doing it in Tulsa. They have more venues. They have more stages. They have more people actively doing it. And so we're behind because we're smaller. The more comedy venues we have, the more comics we have, it's not going to hurt us.
No.
You know? And even if some comics were doing a show that didn't work or was offensive somewhere else or something like that, I never worry about that for me because no one's going to come to me and be like, hey, we're getting rid of your show at, you know, venue XYZ because this thing happened across town with these other comics. I might get asked about it, and I have been asked about, like, different comics and incidents and stuff like that because they get curious, but it's never caused me to lose anything that I have. So I've never had a bad experience based on the existence of other shows, existence of other comics. Like, it truly doesn't do anything to me.
Yeah. Well, and as much as you want to do it, you also want to see those who want to, like, do it as well.
It's going to help. I mean, I don't know if that seems obvious to people or not, but, like, imagine a Tulsa where there was Let's say we had like 200 more comics overnight, but a bunch of them were like running shows also. And there was like 3 shows a night and everybody was bringing their friends and everybody had a lot of friends and they were bringing their family. And it was just like 3 packed comedy nights a night around town and, more opening up. And that was like every night. Maybe, I'm sure my numbers were wrong there. We need, you know, less comics, more shows. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just imagine the opportunities that would be available mm-hmm. and how crazy it would be to just live in Tulsa. Like, Tulsans would be like, yeah, dude, you can go out, but you're probably going to end up at a comedy show. You know? That would be so fucking tight.
Yeah.
You know? One of these days, maybe. We'll make you it know? That.
I love the lack of surprise when people walk into a venue downtown and a comedy show's happening that they didn't know about. But they're not surprised.
Yeah.
Because they're like, comedy's here. You know, it's like, it's not a weird thing where, you know, we're like, what the hell are they doing? It's like, no, comics are here. They run these spaces as much as anybody else, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not a bad thing. You know, and I love that. Like the normalcy of it compared to when I started where it wasn't like that. And then even comparing it to like South Tulsa, we're like, yes, genuinely, if you walked into some South Tulsa places and a comedy show was happening, people are genuinely like, what in the hell?
Yeah.
You know, but that doesn't happen downtown. Downtown people are like, yes, performance is happening. There could be a spoken word. There could be comedy. There could be music. There could be juggling. But there could be like burlesque. But they're like, yeah, if I show up at Whittier or Sound Pony, like, there could be a performance. Like, I know that before I go there. And I love that.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I do, at the start of every riff show, I ask the crowd, who knew there was going to be a comedy show here? And when we started doing it, there would be quite a few hands. But the last couple, there were no hands. And I'm like, fuck yeah. You guys came here for this. And nobody leaves. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's listen to some ads and make some money.
Hey, do you use drugs? It's okay. I did it for a really long time, and I'm going to be completely honest. Safety was not my number one concern. But if you need clean gear, spoons, condoms, oil burners, or most importantly, Narcan, come on, man. You got to keep Narcan around. Even if you're not using, if you have friends who do, you can keep it. Just throw it in your backpack.
Call SHOTS at 918-973-2671 for free delivery anywhere in Tulsa. Don't use alone, and please keep Narcan on hand. Again, that is SHOTS. Stop harm on Tulsa streets.
I got an air horn sound effect. We're back with How Do You Do?
That was so loud.
It was super loud. It did max out the waveform on my workstation, but that's fine. That's fine. It'll be welcome in the cars of our listeners. And if we blow out your Bluetooth speaker,
sorry.
Yeah. Pitbull does it every day.
Oh God.
DJ Khaled makes millions of dollars blowing out Bluetooth speakers. So we can do this.
Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back. I'm Brad Breakfast, Hannah Backwards. Evan Hughes is our guest. Evan, how do you create connections with the venue owners?
I think a lot of this, unfortunately, because it's me, I get reminded of this a lot by, you know, some people. I'll try to describe things and they'll be like, well, that's because you're Evan. You know, and it's like a cheat code now where it's like not really fair, where I could walk into a random place and be like, yeah, I'm Evan. I want to start a comedy night. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, I've heard of you. And I just have to say these other ones I've done or I'm doing and boom, you know, because I have a track record over the last years. And I've made a lot of venues money.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
So I'm not known for like, you know, asking for $200 up front, and then I bring 3 people, and then you never hear from me again. And if you do shit like that, you know, word will get out, and they'll be like, yeah, I don't work with that guy. I typically don't ask for anything big up front. You know, I'm even willing to put on a show and be like, hey, this is what we do. you know, and then we can talk about it.
Yeah.
You know? So I try to think about how it was when I first started to try to, you know, if I'm addressing, you know, people that don't run eight other shows, what their life would be like if they were trying to do it themselves, if that's what this is. But I think it would just be like, you know, it's a similar thing with, I think, with Hilton and Laura doing Starlight was, I think they had a personal relationship with the staff there. And it, Laura works there now, but I don't think she worked there when they first started the comedy night. I could be wrong, but that's how I'm remembering it. But, I mean, if you go in a place and you hang out and you're a customer and you're drinking there or eating there or whatever it is, and then 2 months later after you become friends with them, you're like, by the way, you know, I do comedy and I like to do a show here. You know, then they know you, you know, and you're not just someone that just walked in out of nowhere with a business card, you know. So I think getting active in the community and being someone that they know and is, you know, spending money there helps, I'm sure. I mean, just being a customer. I mean, there's people that are probably like a regular enough at a certain bar where it's like they don't even know it, but it's like you could walk up to them and be like, hey, I'm trying to start this thing here. And it's like, dude, you pretty much pay the light bill with the drinks that you buy here.
Yeah, sure. So it's like,
we'll work with you. Yeah, we know you. You know, you come here every week regardless. You know, why don't you have a, you know, you want to start a trivia night here, or a comedy night, or whatever it is that you say you can do. We'll at least try it with you. And you say it goes badly, they might have to have a conversation and be like, hey, this isn't really working for us. But there shouldn't be any hard feelings. And if you do have like a bad breakup with a venue, that could follow you to, you know, you trying to have a dealing somewhere else where they're like, hey, we just told them we couldn't do the night anymore. And they told us to fuck off and made a post about us. You know, it's like, that's not the way you want to, you know, handle yourself. You know, if a venue breaks up with you, it's in your best interest to just be like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, that's just... I think that makes perfect sense. You know, it's like Tulsa's a small town where the same rules of dating apply to booking venues.
That's amazing.
You know,
I think it's true.
Do one and then, you know, ghost them.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, word of mouth. It's everybody talks.
Yeah. Be communicative. You know, you'll go far.
That's incredible. So have you ever had talent piss off the venue?
Yes. Yes, I have. Multiple times. and I think in that case, you need to hope that your relationship is so strong that it can withstand that a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, and you will have to be, and you might make a promise that you'll be more safe in who you're choosing. You're like, I'll be choosier. I'll be more careful. I'll book people I'm 100% sure about. Maybe then you mess up again a year later, but maybe then you've had a year of good shows. You know, but I mean, or maybe you might not ever be able to take a risk at that venue again, depending on how serious it was, mm-hmm. whatever happened. Or you might just lose it. I mean, you are taking a chance every time someone comes on stage and has your mic, they could have a meltdown and cost you the venue. But it's the same thing as like, say you're in a relationship with someone and you bring a friend over to the house. You know, depending on what they do, that could impact your relationship possibly. You know, or maybe you have such a good relationship that like your friend coming over could do anything, get away with anything. And then it's like, hey, I understand why that happened. You didn't want that to happen. I know it's not on you, like, but just try to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, that Peter told me a story like that when I was first starting to book, I think. And he's told me the story like four times. I won't mention the comic, but he just... It's a story he'll tell about booking a show where he said the room walked and the venue killed the show in the middle of the show. And he told me multiple times, he's like, be careful. He's like, this can happen. It happened to me. You know, and I could envision it. In theory, that could happen. You know, someone could say something so fucking crazy that everybody gets up and walks out.
Yeah.
And the venue is like, hey, fuck this. I just saw my entire room walk. Uh-huh. We're done. Fuck this comedy shit.
Yeah. So
you know, they don't know you well enough.
I had a comic, I didn't ban the kid, but I did kick him out. He went on stage. He had already been sitting at the bar talking about how he was going to shock us and calling us homophobic things and commenting about that. And goes on stage and immediately asks a lesbian couple who had, one of them was a comic and had established that she was 100% gay. He offered to be a third, made her very uncomfortable, and then dropped a slur.
Yep.
The R word. And I just stood up and I was like, get the fuck out. And I was angry. At that point, I had had enough, and it showed, but it was like, even if it didn't offend me, it's going to offend most of the people in the room. And if you have the entire room walk out, they're going to talk about how this open mic, they just let whatever happen on stage, or, you know, you won't have an audience. You'll just have comics, which isn't a great open mic.
I mean, or even show. You want people to come to your shows.
I've taken some risks. I mean, it's funny when you think back at me. It's like the same thing as driving. It's like, you know, there were times where it's like, man, I definitely could have been in an accident. And I'm not even just talking about drinking and driving, but it's times where you weren't paying attention like you should. And you just think of the times where it's the same thing with booking comics. It's like there's comics where I didn't know them well enough to give them a mic, but I like to think I can kind of feel people out a little bit. I mean, it's funny to say that, but I do, you know, you can meet someone and talk to them for like 20 minutes and feel like they're not going to say a slur. Like, you're like, we have mutual friends. This person's probably cool. I can give them a spot. But it's like, you don't really like know. I mean, there was even recently at Rabbit Hole, and this isn't a story of where it went bad like yours was, but a guy came up to me and was like, dude, I'm from Dallas. I do the show in Dallas, blah, blah, blah. Do you got any room on the show to throw me on? And I was like, yeah, bet. And I was like, what's your name? That was it. And he was on my stage, my stage, you know. But it's, I mean, he could have got up there and did whatever the fuck in the world. You know, he could have started screaming slurs and threw the microphone down and, you know, damaged the equipment. And it's like, they would have been like, Evan, what the fuck? You know, and all I would be able to have is like any goodwill I've built up and just being like, dude, I got played. Mm-hmm. Like, he told me that this is what his story was. Yeah. I didn't know him. And then I would probably have to lock down that room as far as like, I wouldn't ever be able to do that again because I'd constantly be hearkening, or is that the word for remembering?
Yeah.
Remembering back when that happened. And so there's things like that that can totally change the trajectory of what you might do as a booker going forward. Just like a really bad experience, you know, and I've been pretty lucky in that. It's funny, even like Chaz, who's like one of our mutual like favorite comics. He's like everybody's favorite comic.
Yeah.
I met Chaz, I think, in like a parking lot at night, and he was like, I could do it. And I was like, yeah, I bet you could. Yeah. And I was like, you seem funny, you know, and booked him on a show. He came in and he killed it. But it's like, who was I to know that?
Yeah.
You know, it was just, it's like, there's times, it's like in, I've heard people talk about this in sports where there's times where it's like the coach can either look like a fucking genius or like the biggest idiot.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of times you're just kind of rolling the dice. And you're like, I think this is the play right now.
Yeah.
Or this is the move. Like, you're just kind of feeling it out or going off of what you think. And it's like, yeah, it's, I mean, obviously, like, you get good vibes from Chaz right away. But, you know, you can never say 100% on a first meeting or if you barely know someone. You can get played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
It happens.
Yeah. But I've been pretty loose with it, and it kind of depends on the venue, you know, the venue that I put you up in. I might put you up, if I don't know you that well, you might be on this show.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, this show, I know them really well. If it did go south, it'd probably be okay here. You know? I mean, and that's just,
it's something you have to think about.
Yeah. You're like a weatherman, and you're like, this is what I think the weather is. You know?
Well, and now we, since we're such a community, and like how the way you answered the Rivals question explains this, but if we have a bad experience with somebody, we let each other know.
Yeah.
I mean, I message you and tell you, like, this guy did my mic and you don't want to fucking book him.
Yeah.
He's going to piss people off. And that is valuable information and leads to the next question. What does it take to be unbookable?
Man, that is
nebulous.
I mean, and there's a lot of combinations of things, and I think it just depends on God, yeah. There's a lot. I think that's a pretty. Is that? Yeah, I don't know.
that's the best answer so far.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I think this is true, though. It's like, I don't know that there should be people that don't ever deserve redemption. You know what I mean? It's yeah. like, it seems crazy to be like, well, I am the judge and jury of this person, and they will never work in this town again. Like, I don't sit here and say that. But yeah, I don't, it's tricky me as like a straight white guy being also the one that's like determining who is and who isn't booked. So I think a lot of times I do need to listen to the community, where if like the community is telling me to do it this way, it's like you kind of a little bit have to go along with it. I mean, it's funny. I was having this conversation the other night with my partner about the Oscars and how it's sort of like the times where they're like trying to go against all of the public opinion and what the public opinion is saying, mm-hmm. where it's like there's an extremely popular movie, but they're like, we're not going to even nominate. It won't be nominated for Best Picture yeah. because we know better. Despite all these receipts, mm-hmm. all these positive reviews, all these ticket sales, we're going to tell the community to go fuck itself and give it to this movie over here that a much, much, much smaller amount of people, you know, are like, we know better. You know, that's what yeah. it comes down
you
to. It's
don't
like,
know
we know better.
That was good.
And that's like me saying, I know better. It's like you guys are telling me that there's a problem with booking this person or they're making you uncomfortable, but it's like, but I'm going to be like, no, I know better than you, or like your opinion doesn't matter. It's like I'm in a position where I do need to listen to what people are saying, because it's kind of, it's like it's a community show that I'm facilitating in some way. And I think then it is in some way similar to the Oscars thing, where it's kind of like you need to listen to people, you know. You can't just do whatever the fuck you want to do without other people's input. I need to take, and I should take, all of your input and all of your messages that you send me about people, because why would I just say your opinion doesn't matter and this is my show, when it's actually a community show at a venue that I don't even own.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Yeah. Well, and if the message gets to you from anyone, it had a good reason.
And they trust me too, I think, to like, you know, if the lineup, you know, when I send Jess a flyer and it's like these six names on it or whatever, she's assuming that two of them have not been called out recently for like, you know, pedophilia or something. Yeah. You know, she's like assuming like, all right, these people are cool. You know, it might not be the funniest thing ever. Like, I'm not guaranteeing that every comic on it is going to slay the entire time they're up there, but it's not going to be like a problem for my venue to post this flyer.
Right.
Right.
You know? And it's like, that's the relationship that we have that I'm trying to not cross. And I have no interest in that anyway, even if there's no world in which I would want to do that anyway. Yeah. You know?
Well, good. Again, you're a great person, you know? Well, I mean, speaking of how great of a person you are, have you ever been pissed off by a comic? I don't think I've ever seen you mad.
Dude, yeah. Me and... I think I've, like, had issues with two comics in the scene, or three, and they're all resolved now. They're all resolved.
Yeah.
And they were not like issues like maybe what it sounds like, where it's like I got mad at their set being too long or something. Like, it wasn't like that. It was just different variables that comes, I think, with being like, we're really like coworkers at a company that no one really owns.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
no HR department. You know, yeah. I guess the HR department is the Facebook post.
It is. Yeah.
You know, which is fucking crazy that we're trying to maintain that is like, this is what we have, you know? And it's like, and I do think it feels the exact same way. It's like, that's the vibe I got, I think, was it was sort of either like two brothers not getting along or like two coworkers. Like, it really, it didn't even feel like, it felt like a business thing that wasn't working out or was like being caused by the nature of the business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
and I would tell those stories, but I think they're just, yeah, I mean, because they're resolved and stuff, and that all
yeah,
the people are alive. Yeah, we don't need to drag that up. But it's like, but that's at least that's me saying that it can happen. and those things can be resolved. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like just because you're having an issue with someone right now doesn't mean that it has to last forever. Like things can get worked out. Like it just, no matter what it is, like all three of the things that I thought of in that moment were all totally different things with totally different people, and they all got worked out.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
What do you look for in a new comic?
I think the main thing they all the good ones have in common is that they're like very hungry to do it. Like they really want it. Like they're dreaming about it. They're thinking about it all the time. They're messaging me. It's like, I can tell like whether or not they're someday going to be on Comedy Central, which doesn't fucking matter to me. And that shouldn't be like whether they're a success or not to them. Like, I don't think that defines whether you're a success or not, but they might be in that place where they're dreaming. And that's cool of like, someday I'm going to do this for a living. And they might. Like, honestly, that's still a dream for me, truly, that, like, there's comics now that we're working with and putting on shows that might someday walk out on stage at Madison Square Garden or something. I mean, it's like, wild, but who the fuck knows? Like, you truly can't say without a doubt that this person can't do it.
Yeah.
Or, like, you will never make it. You know, it's like, you can't say that. It's funny, like we've seen success grow from the scene. I mean, we saw, like, I wasn't really active then, but Steven Castillo went from his first set at Tulsa Looney Bin to being a writer on Saturday Night Live. That's a true life, you know, success story that happened. Zach Bryan, you know, has over 1 million followers on Instagram doing country music. I booked him at Rabbit Hole one night in 2019. That happened, you know, and he's doing huge shit. He's
killing it.
Huge, huge shit. But that could happen to anybody. And that's a dream for me that one day, I even forgot the question, that one day these comics could become massively successful. Oh, I just remembered you asked me what I look for in a new comic. But I can tell the comics that message me most, or they're reacting to like show flyers that they're not even on. They're sending like fire, you know, shit on Instagram, or they're like messaging me like, do you have anything? Or they're like, is there anything you could tell me about my set? Or like, do you notice anything you think I should do better? And like, they're posting all the flyers on everything and they're talking about it and they're bringing people. It's like, that comic is different. That energy is different. Mm-hmm. And I can feel and see them. And it's like, I can't not think of them, you know? And there's other comics where I can tell it's like they're busy doing something else. Yes, they used to do comedy. Yes, they have a set. But if I go look at their social media, they're dealing with something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I might offer them a show and bring them out and stuff, but they are not the ones that got into the 6 months or a year ago that are making it their whole life, which is like I relate to that, too, because I was that same way. It was like when I started, I went to every show. You could bring Billy Bizarre on here and ask him. You know, he'd be like, Evan was at every fucking show. When he did shows in Joplin and I wasn't on, I rode up with him to Joplin. And then I would end up, a lot of times he'd be like, all right, you can have a guest spot, kid. You know? And that was what I did, you know? And it was hard to forget me because I was at the show. Often when he's booking the next show, I'm at least in his sight, you know? Right? And we would be at Village Inn. You know, afterwards, I'm sitting there, and he's like, oh, yeah, I got a show coming up. I mean, half the shows I was on were booked at Village Inn.
Yeah.
You know, because I was there.
Right.
And, like, so I would say to new comics, it's like, be hungry, and I do look for that. It's not the only thing. I mean, if you're not getting laughs, and you're just really hungry to do it, but it's not clicking for you, and it's not working out, like, I mean, there's only so much I can do with that, you know, but like the comics, we'll do shout outs. We'll say Lacey Rains, Cepeda Cheeks. There's a bunch of them that are new. Zach Ofis. They're fucking funny and they obviously care. And why wouldn't I book them? I'd be stupid. Like they're funny. They bring people like they care. They want to do it. That makes for a good show and it's fresh.
Yeah.
So I think a show, a good show is a mix of a lot of different types of types of comics. Like, you don't want to have four white guys with glasses all going in a row, and that's the show. Even if they're all funny, you know, whatever the case is. I mean, you want to have a variety, but yeah, you're looking for comics that fit several different areas. It's like, you know, a video game character, a sports player or something. It's like, they're good at rebounding, they're good at shooting, they can be on this team. You know, this basketball team, you know, slash comedy show.
Kels Coop is my shout out, by the way.
Yeah, Kels Coop, dude.
Yeah.
Kels is, I've got killing another show with her coming up on Heirloom. And the only reason I didn't have Kels on for a while, she messaged me and was like, oh, I'm not doing bookings right now.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I helped her connect to Vanguard. And like, her shows are fucking huge at Vanguard.
Yeah, she's killing it.
So it's excited. Insane.
Yeah, Vanguard is coming to me and they're like, dude, her shows are fucking amazing. You know, and like, that's them coming to me. And that makes me look good. It doesn't make me look bad. It was like, yeah, I introduced you to her.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make
they appreciated it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like that didn't hurt me that her show made them a sellout amount of money.
Yeah.
You know, that's just like, I'm a connection they should still have, mm-hmm. You know?
So do you recommend comics learn how to book shows, learn how to host?
I think so. Like, eventually, I mean, you don't have to get here and make that your thing you do right away. But I mean, I think it's definitely something that's going to be helpful. It's not going to hurt you. I think I started hosting out of necessity. But also, I was emceeing shows even from early on. And, you know, that was something where... So the difference, I think, between me and Billy, who was the primary booker when I started, mm-hmm. was Billy talked about himself and thought about himself as a promoter, which I acknowledge that I am too. But he had shows that he wasn't on at all in any capacity.
Yeah.
He would choose the MC and he would choose the whole lineup and he would just hang out. And he still went up a bunch. If the show was hot, he would just add himself as a guest set and he would just go up. that's why I would get to MC. And I could do that. I don't really know why I haven't done that, where I've made myself the host of everything, where I could just give someone else the MC and I show up to make sure it runs right. But maybe I could do that in the future, but I just hadn't really been thinking about that as like a skill that like someone needs. I mean, there's ways, I think, to get that, to find things for you to host. So Lacey, that we brought up earlier, she messaged me recently about a show that she's trying to get organized, and she was asking me for help with it. But I think she's going to co-host it with me, or... you know, something like that.
At the day center?
The day center, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, that's an example of someone that's 6 to 10 months in, or however long it's been now, where they have now gone and they haven't hosted anything as far as I know. But they're like, obviously they're thinking, I'm ready to host a show or I can do it.
Yeah.
And they're just at that stage in their development where they decided on their own without me. I wasn't like, hey, go get a show at the day center, you know? They were like, I can do this. Yeah, I've watched
they took
it
that initiative.
Be done. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, anybody that's not running a show, go run one. You know, and if it goes badly, then you probably just won't have a show, but at least you tried.
Yeah, it's a good learning experience.
Good learning experience.
Yeah. Does it take up all your free time doing all of this for the community?
No, not all my free time. I think almost all of the stuff that you would look at on paper and be like, this might annoy him, I actually like more than you would think that I would like it. Like, someone, it was actually Jess the other day when we were talking about the spelling bee, we were just going back and forth about like, okay, so we should have, you know, a clock because you can't let them like take forever to think of the spelling of the word or whatever. And we're just going back and forth about how it should look, how many contestants should it have, you know, just all the shit. And she was like, all right, I'm going to stop, you know, blowing you up with these messages. And I was like, dude, I talk about shows all day, every day, and I have for years. And like, I don't mind getting these messages, and I'm going to get another one soon, and it's fine. It doesn't annoy me. It's just what I do. You know, it was like, there was no point where I was thinking of cutting you off. Like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, this is, it's normal to wake up to a show message. Yeah. And dude, yeah, and so many times it's actually a good thing, you know, where you get a message, and 9 times out of 10 the messages are more about just really basic stuff, like messages that I get are like, where am I at in the order, you know, stuff like that. It's like stuff that I didn't tell them, you know, or how long am I doing, you know, and it's just like, you ever, you should know that, you know. So it's not annoying to me at all. I really can't think of, I'm trying to remember the last time I was legitimately annoyed by a message related to a show, and I can honestly not think of one. Even people like asking to be on a show, again, that's just like initiative. How am I going to be like, why the fuck is this guy asking to be on Heirloom or whatever? It's like, all right, why are they asking to be on Heirloom? Are they someone that I should just refer? And this has happened too, where I've just referred them to go to more mics. You know, where it's like, I can tell them about Starlight or Hunt Club.
Yeah.
If I'm not trying to actively put them on a showcase, why am I not helping them in some other way?
Yeah.
You know, who should I refer them to, or what should I give them that's helpful?
Yeah.
You know, I'm really not telling people to fuck off, you know.
And
I'm
that's
really
good.
Not. Yeah. Well, there's no need to, and it's shitty, and it's not necessary.
Yeah.
You know?
Is there anything that you would recommend or tell a new booker, someone who wants to do this?
Dude, I actually hung out with Adam. I can't remember if we talked about Adam on the show or not.
Bush.
But Adam Bush, yeah. We met up at Chimera, and we talked for about this long or longer about booking, because they're starting a show at Welltown.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we had like an hour and a half meeting about it, and it was great, and I loved talking to Adam about it. And there was a bunch of shit that I was telling him where he was like, oh, man, I didn't even think of that yet. It's like, damn. You know, it's like, I only learned that from doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Or doing it, like, in a way where it was just, like, so much of it you just learn. It's like learning to, you know, drive a car. It's like there's so much that you'll learn to be able to get a license and to pass the driving test. But there's stuff that will kind of come up on the road where you're just like, oh, yeah, I got to kind of watch for that, too.
Yeah.
You know, or, yeah. like... You know, you just kind of, yeah, it's like trial and error. It's like the same thing as it's exactly like starting your own show and learning from it what to do, what not to do. It's the same thing as stand up. It's like when you're up on stage and you're like, oh, maybe I should do like less crowd work or more crowd work, or like I shouldn't do a joke that starts out like that, or I need to like start with this kind of joke, you know, or this should be the one I close on. It's like there's so much shit that people can't tell you until you're actively doing it. I think some of the biggest mistakes I've made in booking, and I mean, this is like, shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, but it's like there's comics that will bring people to your show, and there's comics that won't. And it's fine that there are comics that don't bring people. It's totally fine. It is totally fine, especially if they're really funny. A lot of times, you know, there's comics where I'll book you and I'm like, I don't expect them to bring anyone, but their set is fucking funny and the show is better because they're on it.
Yeah.
But if I book the show as just 5 comics that don't bring anyone, like they're going to show up and be kind of like, not mad at me, but they'll kind of be surprised probably and like, what were you thinking on booking the show? You know, it's kind of like, I'm not really doing them any favors. They drove all the way out to perform in front of 4 comics that they're probably close friends with that they also knew weren't bringing anyone. They knew they weren't bringing anyone. And it's kind of like, what did you do by scheduling this here?
Yeah.
You know, what were you thinking about? Like, they expect me. I think they look at the flyer and they're like, he's got a plan with this lineup. Like, there's someone that he thinks, or 2 people or 3 people, that he thinks are gonna bring people to the show, you know, besides himself, you know, and it's like I've made a mistake before where I've been like, well, this comic is gonna bring me X number of people, and for whatever reason, like they're busy and they didn't tell anyone about that show, and I can't be like, what the fuck, dude? Like I shouldn't have put all my eggs in this one basket. And I'm like, that's a learning experience. Mm-hmm. If you think the whole show depends on one comic that you're sure is going to bring 30 people and they bring nobody, that was your mistake as a booker, and you shouldn't be mad at that comic.
Sure.
You know, nobody is responsible for getting people to that show except for you.
We don't have bringer shows here.
Yeah.
That just doesn't exist. And if you tried it, people would laugh at you because we're not that kind of, it's just not that kind of city. You should be, I mean, you should expect a certain amount of promotion from your talent, but you should do the lion's share of it because it's your show. It's your baby.
Yeah.
I mean, do the work.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely get that. That just resonated
with me. But it's also like, yeah, I mean, it's a combination of things. I mean, I have a certain amount of draw for my shows. You're going to get X number of people if you put Evan Hughes hosted by whatever. Like, you're going to get X number of people there. But I typically want even more people than that. And that's kind of what I'm talking about, you know, where like I can, you know, maybe I'll have 15 people here just off my name on it, no matter who I booked on it. That's cool, but that's not like, maybe that wouldn't be like a great show.
Yeah.
You know, so I would ideally, I'd be like, okay, well, if this comic brings me 4, this one brings me 3, and this one brings me 5, and then I have these other two that are just like, these guys have an incredible set. That's a great show.
Yeah.
You know, we're all bringing something. Someone's bringing their 10 years of comedy experience. Someone's bringing their 6 friends that want to see their 3rd show. And I'm bringing what I bring, and then we're all working together to make the car run.
Yeah.
And there's been times where I just, and it's just going to happen, where I was like, this is the lineup, or I didn't pay quite enough attention to it and didn't, you know, it just didn't, you know, I didn't promote it enough. The comics didn't promote it enough, which I'm not putting it on them, but I mean, it's like, you know, ideally everybody helps the show in some way.
I mean, whatever, they're a part of it, you know. Too. Even if they're not booking it, they are a part of it.
Yeah. So it's just, it's, I've had comics bring, you know, 15 people to a show where I wasn't even expecting them to do that. And it was just like, holy shit. Haley Parker did that for me at Thelma's. She was like, oh, dude. And Thelma, and she's done a ton of my shows. And I don't book Haley to bring a bunch of people. Like, Haley is funny as fuck. She's talent. I love her. She's hilarious. That's not why she gets booked. But she was like, she messaged me and she's like, dude, I think I have a lot of people coming to the show. Like, all my family's coming. And I was like, I don't even remember what was going on, but we showed up and it was packed with people that know her. It was family and friends. I don't remember what the deal was, but it was like unintentionally. It was like, thank you. This is fucking awesome for not just me, but for all the comics here that have a much larger crowd than what we would have had, you know? So it's like, you did that. Thank you. Not only was your set good, but you really helped fill this room out. And thank you. And we need that. That's great.
That seems to help. I mean, make a show great is also having the crowd show up and be there for the comedy.
Yeah, believe me. I mean, I think truly, if I book 5 comics that know they're not bringing people and all 5 show up to an empty room, like that, it doesn't do anyone any good. You know, it's like not me like proving a point. No one's happy. You know, the venue's not happy. They're not happy. They don't want to just perform in front of their friends, you know? So it's like, I think when an older comic comes to do my show, that's like, hey, I'm not even really like bringing people anymore. I'm not posting flyers. I'll pull up and do my set if you want me to. Thank you. And they walk in and I have 60 people there for them. They're like, fuck yeah, dude. Thank you.
Yep.
You know? And that's what I'm trying to do that for them, for me, for the venue, for everybody, you know. And the new comics want to see a funny comic that's been doing it for 10 years. Like, they want to see, like, everybody is getting something out of this.
Sure.
You know.
So now we are to the point in the show where we get to plug and promote everything we got. Evan, what do you got coming up?
I've got 2 Heirloom shows this month, not counting the spelling bee. That'd be 3 Heirloom shows. I have 2 comedy shows at Heirloom this month. One on the 20th, one on the 25th. I've got Looney Bin February 5th. I've got Vanguard February 10th. Tulsa Comedy Club February 17th. Thelma's the 29th. I'm definitely forgetting some stuff. But then all the usual stuff next month that cycles around. There'll be the Sound Pony show. And the Lefty show is coming up. I think it's Tuesday next week is the Lefties on Greenwood show. And I just want to do some more shout outs while I'm here.
Do it.
Daniel Balderas is killing it. Check him out. He's a new comic, very funny. Steven Cryer, new comic, very funny. Drew Robinson, new comic, very funny. Who else? Who have I not named? There's a lot of good
JoJo
comics right
Horse
now.
Chief.
Yeah.
Fucking killing it. She's been coming to Starlight. And we already mentioned Kels.
Who have you seen at Starlight that you really like?
Well, those two are amazing, and I just adore them. And you mentioned, I mean, he's not a new comic, but Adam Bush. Adam is one of my favorite comics from Tulsa. Yeah.
He's so kind. Yeah. He's so humble. I mean, he's got his, did his special come out, his Dry Bar special?
No, but it is going to. It's going to soon.
See, I mean, and that's like, he's, you know, Adam will do like any of my shows, and he's got that special coming out. I think it's dope. Like, I gave him that intro at Rabbit Hole, and someone was like, he's got a special coming out. I was like, how did you get him to do this show? You know?
Yeah.
And it was just like, because he's cool as fuck. Special,
yeah.
You know? Cause like, because he's awesome. You know? And that's the same thing with like Josh Fadem, too. It's like, he's been on a bunch of shit, but he comes and does my show for nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's cool. That's it. That's the only reason. You know, he's just popping in for the love of comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what we should be doing it for. We should be doing it because we like doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, Thunderwolf, and you mentioned Cepeda. God, who else have we seen new recently who's great?
Yeah, not to ignore the greats like Dan Fritchie.
Yeah.
You know, and all the legends, the icons. The
icons.
One of my favorites ever.
I mean,
Hilton Price. Yeah.
We got Michael TJ Zampino. To come out of retirement.
Dude, yeah. TJ has done two of my shows lately and crushed.
JC Thompson. I've got that show coming up with him.
I knew I was forgetting something.
Yeah. No, JC is phenomenal. He's gonna do great things. I'm so excited to work with him at Ruby Red, actually, the new open mic.
He crushed on my Vanguard show. It was fucking crazy, yeah. Dude. And I can always say that when I always have friends there, like people with me. I rely a lot on what, you know, my partner says or what my friend Muriel that comes to a lot of my shows. They'll be like, I really like that. They'll be like, they were really funny, and they don't have any bias at all.
Yeah, they're just there for the show.
Yeah, they're not trying to dislike anyone. They're not like, you know, it doesn't matter what you look like or what age you are or gender or whatever. They're just like, that was good.
Yeah.
You know, and I listen to that. It's like a real time review that has no bias that from my own self. You know, like if I was booking the shows without anyone saying anything to me, then it would be, I think, too much of a just. Oh, another couple of good comics. I wrote Draven, always Nicolo,
of
Taylor
course,
Tope.
Yeah.
There's so many.
I mean, there's so many.
Shauna Bradley McPherson.
Yeah,
Bradley. Bradley's new closer, the My Chemical Romance Joe Diffie closer. It might be the best joke or best closer, both in Tulsa.
Yeah.
Like, it's the only joke in Tulsa that almost guarantees, like, an applause break, or, like, you know it's going to kill.
Yes.
Like, there's no fucking question. I've seen it kill. It killed in Lefties. It killed at a restaurant. It killed at Vanguard. It's killed at Foolish Things Coffee Shop. It's, like, it's that joke where it's, like, I don't care what this crowd is. This is going over.
That joke is magical.
Yeah. It's the same thing as, like, when you see... the times I've worked at Looney Bin is the opener where it's like you're with that touring comic and you're like, their closer, it hits on Wednesday, it hits on Thursday, it hits twice on Friday, it hits twice on Saturday. And like it's like a road comic or TV level closer. It's a fucking great joke.
Yes.
I'm not kidding. I told Brad that like the first time. It was like, when I book Brad now, it's like, that's that fucking
Please
joke.
Please do that joke.
Yeah.
That joke.
Yeah.
Fucking kills.
God. I mean, I couldn't not bring up Laura Cook.
Yes.
I mean, like my absolute ride or die Laura, my co-host at Starlight, the person who has kept me sane for the past year, you know, at that fucking mic when I'm losing my shit and I go to her and she's like, it's fine, just let it go.
In her joke where she talks about the rapper that she saw and she gets people to say her name.
Laura Cook.
It's fucking incredible. And I booked her at Sound Pony and she didn't do that joke. And I was like, what? And I try to not be that person that's like, why wasn't that joke in your set? So I didn't say anything, but I was like, that joke is fucking fire.
Yeah, it's fun.
You know, maybe she, you know, sometimes you just don't, you don't think of it or you don't feel like doing it, but like, because I'm the same way. It's like people probably, I have some joke they want to hear and I don't do it. But like, like it's an awesome fucking joke.
Yeah, I've got the one about oysters that people are obsessed with for some reason.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest joke
I
have.
It makes you fuck good.
Yeah.
It's a hot sauce joke. I know that joke. That joke fucking slaps. Yeah. It slaps.
Okay, let's, you got one. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, just our other podcast, Podcasting to Perfection. If you're a Tremors fan, if you're not a Tremors fan, please check it out. Either way, there's something in there for everyone because we definitely go on our own little tangents that not that are not Tremors related. But it's been a good time, and next episode comes out tomorrow night. So just keep an eye out for that, please.
Yeah. I mentioned the mic starting at Ruby Red. The first Sunday in February is the first one. We're doing it every Sunday at 7 o'clock. That's Ruby Red next to Elgin Park Pizza and the ball field. And then the last Sunday of the month, we're going to do a riff show after the open mic. So we're getting a second riff show because that has been so successful, and we love doing it. It's a blast every time. I'm hosting that with JC Thompson. We're going to have rotating co-hosts. I'm going to rotate in and out if I want because... it's too much. I'm doing the Starlight Comedy Night, February 10th. Yeah, that's it. There's definitely other stuff. Oh, I'm judging Insult Attack on February 3rd, and I've got a riff show at Heirloom on the 4th, on February 4th. That's a Saturday night. So come on out to that. Come on out to everything Evan's got going on. In Tulsa, you can generally see a comedy show almost every night of the week. That is not an exaggeration. So we would love to see you. Thank you for listening. This has been How Do You Do?
Thanks for having me.
Yo, thank you for doing it.
Thank you for coming. Bye.
Bye.
Hail Satan!
This has been a Booger Satan Bitch Fest production.